Welcome, friends. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com, on the 11th of August, 2015. Today we are talking to Richard Heathen, who you might remember. We've had several conversations in the past. I've been featured in interviews on his channel, and I've posted them to my own website, so you can check the archives of CorbettReport.com for some of those previous conversations. But today we're going to be talking about his new, or not so new, but still newish documentary film, Hidden Influence, The Rise of Collectivism, which is available for free viewing up on YouTube, but you can also purchase a copy of the film to help support the filmmaker at libertymachinenews.com. Is that the right address, or am I sending people to the wrong place?
No, that's right. libertymachinenews.com.
That's it. libertymachinenews.com/hiddeninfluence. You can find the documentary and download it in HD or purchase a DVD. Richard, thank you so much for coming on the program again.
Well, thank you very much for having me, James. It's been a while.
It certainly has. In fact, people might notice when they watch this documentary that I am one of the people who are featured in here as one of the talking heads, as it were, in this documentary. And I believe that was recorded at least 2 years ago at this point, maybe more.
That was a long time ago. The kind of film has gone through numerous kind of incarnations, we'll say, just because I was trying to just get it just right and solidify my own views. But now I think I've come to a place where I really can share something of value with people.
Well, you share it in a highly, highly slick way. If people look at this documentary, it is very well edited, well put together. Trust me, I know how much time and effort and energy goes into editing some things to make it look good. And this documentary really does look very good. So my hat's off to you for that. And also, I know this has been years in the making, literally, and I can't complain about that, given the fact that it took me so long to get my Federal Reserve documentary out there. Again, I know how much effort goes into putting together a well-crafted documentary. So let's introduce people to this overall. If you were to give the back of the box blurb just a few sentences to describe what is the overall theme and message of this documentary, what would you say?
Basically, the theme and point of the documentary is the power elite, through their tax-exempt foundations, funding authoritarian and collectivist ideologies.
That's exactly right. Now, let's tease that out for people who don't understand what that ultimately means. Authoritarian, I think people have an image in their head of what that means, and we have some examples, obviously, that stand out from the 20th century of authoritarian regimes. But what is collectivism itself?
Well, collectivism is generally, I think the word was initially used by Ayn Rand, or that's the first use of it that I'm really familiar with, but it basically means any system in which the group is elevated over the rights and importance of the individual. So anything, if fascism's collectivism, communism's collectivism, any sort of authoritarian system, they're all collectivism because they all use the pretext of the greater good for the greater number as opposed to the greater good for the individual. That is what is elevated, the greater good of the collective, and is always at the expense of the individual.
And of course, in reality, the greater good for the greater number always ultimately means the greater good for us, whoever us might be in that system, the authoritarians themselves. And it's always clothed in wonderful rhetoric. But let's get into the specifics of how this works and how it is working currently to make the developed Western democracies into more and more collectivized systems. And I find it interesting that the title of this documentary is not Hidden Control or Hidden Conspiracy, it's Hidden Influence. And I think the idea here is that there is a slow, almost Fabian socialist type of working on society that takes place over the course of not just years or decades, but generations, to condition the public into accepting this collectivist ideology. And you do a good job of painting the sort of broad picture of this, going from people like Edward Bernays and John Dewey to people like B.F. Skinner, and then people working even in our current day and age to continue to condition and mold the public. Can you talk a little bit about how education is used as a tool for conditioning the public towards collectivism?
Well, certainly. These themes were pushed by organizations, specifically in the United States system, but they found their way up to where I'm from, Canada. But let's say the General Education Board, they funded numerous initiatives which were promoting a certain worldview, an appreciation, we'll say, of the United Nations, the need for a collective view of society. Say the number two of the organizations I mentioned in my film are the National Education Association, along with the Progressive Education Association. Of course, progressive is means the progressive ideology, which the progressive education system was basically started by John Dewey. He was seen as the godfather of it, and it's basically the idea that there, all of these educators who were influencing the education system in the 20th century decided that there was a new age of collectivism emerging, and that society needed to move away from the individualistic tendencies of Western civilization. So they decided to use education as a way to indoctrinate these ideas into children. And as I go into in my film, the Rees Commission, you know, really showed how that was happening and listed organizations and names. As you know, you can go to Charlotte Iserby's website, American Deception, and you can get all of these documents that I quoted in my film, and they're right there. You know, a lot of what I quote in the film had a lot to do with Charlotte Iserby's work. You know, a lady I interviewed in her book. But you can find all those documents on her website. This isn't some esoteric thing. It's a conspiracy, but it's an open conspiracy. It's an open agenda. It's not hard to find the backing for this information. It's you know, the legwork's already been done by a lot of great people. All it takes is for people to just buckle down and just go find it. It's really simple.
You're exactly right about that. And in fact, The Open Conspiracy was actually the name of a book by H.G. Wells, who was very much a part of this overall agenda. So people might want to check into that, where he said, yes, this is completely open conspiracy, and we're trying to make this and bring this about. And you mentioned, of course, the General Education Board, which was one of the forerunner organizations to these education associations that are operating today. And the General Education Board, founded in 1902 by John D. Rockefeller, surprise, surprise. So yes, it's always these same clique, elite groups and families and foundations that are funding so much of this and bringing it about. And you have such choice quotes in there from people like Dewey and Skinner about this process of educating and manipulating the public consciousness in a certain direction. So let's bring that up towards today, where the documentary and the latter part of the documentary starts to talk about cultural Marxism and identity politics. How is that being used as the vehicle for the front for this collectivist ideology today?
Well, first I'll talk about what cultural Marxism actually is. Cultural Marxism is the application of the Marxist paradigm to the area of culture. So what that means is they see the proletariat as white Western men, the bourgeoisie as white Western men, with the proletariat being women and minorities. So they apply that same oppressor and oppressed paradigm, and then they make critical observations using that paradigm as a lens. The big intellectual theory that they have, it's a kind of a catch-all theory, is called critical theory. Now, critical theory, along with the whole ideology of cultural Marxism, was started by the Frankfurt School in Germany before World War II. These folks wanted to see why some of Marx's early predictions didn't come true, and while some apparently did. The big one was, the proletariat rise up against the bourgeoisie when the Great War of World War I was announced and overthrow their bourgeoisie oppressors? The answer the Frankfurt School came up with was that it was due to the corrupting aspect of the capitalist free enterprise system, that Western materialism had corrupted them, and that in order to bring in their great revolution, they would have to tear down Western culture. Well, to that end, they did create critical theory, and they used that as a movement, and it's become very, very prevalent in institutions today. In universities, we'll say. If you look, there's critical race theory, critical gender theory. It's always some sort of critical theory. And that comes back to the Frankfurt School. Well, this started in the 1970s when the Rockefeller Foundation and Ford Foundation funded the first women's studies university courses and melded them with Marxist theories about exploitation. So that's where you first get the very first manifestation of cultural Marxism and how leftism became so prevalent in the institutions. So, you know, when I say leftism, people often, they mistake the false left-right paradigm in the political system to what I call the real left-right paradigm, which is the silent ideological war happening now. You know, these people who are promoting these ideologies, they're true believers, James. They believe all of this stuff. This isn't everything's not a big George Soros conspiracy. Yes, the elites fund these organizations, but the people who are executing them on the ground are 100% true believers. So you're right, what you said earlier, it's an influence. They fund all, they give a platform and fund the people who are espousing ideas that help them. And they, which gives these other people an advantage in what I call the silent ideological war.
I think you're exactly right about that. And I think, yes, rather than the phony left-right paradigm, maybe it's the up-down paradigm or something like that, where it's collectivism versus individualism or something of that nature. But let's define the opposite a little bit more so that we understand what it is that we can actually posit as a counter to this collectivist ideology. Is it simply people just walling themselves in their house and never going out and meeting anyone? Is that the opposite to collectivism?
No. Basically, when I use the word collectivism, I mean coercive collectivism by the state. You know, human beings, by our very nature, we all know, are social creatures. We depend on one another. That's why we have the division of labor. The alternative, of course, is self-ownership, the non-aggression principle, the idea of the individual not being beholden to the group, but being a means unto themselves. Someone who does not, as a human being, owe anyone else anything simply for the act of existing. I do not have any unwritten or implicit obligations to any group. That is basically the alternative. Free human beings who are free to live their life how they see fit, so long as they are not infringing on the rights and liberties of anybody else.
All right, there's so much detail in this documentary, and as I say, so many quotations and little pieces of history that I think people need to see for themselves. But let's talk about some of the people who are in this documentary. As we mentioned, I am one of the people featured here, but there are some others like Charlotte Iserby. Who else is in this documentary?
I was able to interview Jeff Berwick, the dollar vigilante, a recent internet sensation, Lauren Southern, before she became such a high-profile anti-feminist activist. I was able to interview Tim Mowen, leader of the Libertarian Party of Canada. I interviewed Andrea Tweedy. She's helped me. She's a Liberty Machine News contributor. She helped me with a few articles, which we used as content for the documentary. And I also was able to interview Bernard Chapin. He's a he has his own YouTube channel and does his own media content work under Chapin's Inferno. So yeah, there's a number of people who I almost forgot Walter Block. I was able to interview a number of people for this.
And let's not forget Elaine Dewar.
Oh, that's right, Elaine Dewar. She's going to be featured in my following documentary, the follow-up documentary, Hidden Influence Agenda 21.
Yes, I was going to assume she would feature prominently in that documentary. Let's talk a little bit about what's coming up. So this is part of a series of documentaries, and the next one will be Agenda 21?
Well, yes. I'm also doing a short film before the release of Agenda 21 called For a New Fascism, where I explore the idea of a fascist uprising as a pushback to the excesses of the far left. But the Hidden Influence Agenda 21 will be coming up shortly, sometime in 2016, and it will have prominently feature Elaine Dewar. It'll have some more sections of that interview I did with you. It will have Tim Ball, climatologist Dr. Tim Ball, sections of my interview with Rosa Corey, author of Behind the Green Mask, as well as a Jessica Annis. She is a she's worked as a land use planner, and she was in the interview. She talked about how in her university course at Ryerson University, they openly talked about the UN and how this sustainable agenda is being pushed and how it is comes directly from the United Nations. But she always said she just kind of dismissed it as it was just seemed illogical. But that was before she kind of understood to the ruling power of the power elite and how they are socially engineering society.
Very interesting. Well, as I say, these documentaries don't make themselves. They take a lot of time and effort to put together. So how do people support your work and make sure that you do finish this Agenda 21 documentary?
Well, you can donate to me. There, I think there's a donate button on libertymachinenews.com, or you can just simply buy a digital copy of the film or a DVD. You know, all that's appreciated. Anything you can do to help us out that, you know, will make it easier for me to get this done. I've got pretty much most of the interviews done for the Agenda 21 film. It's just a matter of putting it together and having and because I have a graphic artist who helps me there. It takes a long time for them to get that work done because it really is a lot of work. It takes a lot of time. So
Certainly does. And as I say, this is a very slick documentary. It looks very great. So I'm glad that you're putting in the effort to really make it look as good as possible. And I hope people will support the work. Again, if you enjoy the film, please do purchase a copy or make a donation to make sure that the next edition of this series comes out. All right, Richard Heathen, libertymachinenews.com. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me, James. It's good talking to you again.
Now available from CorbettReport.com. The Data DVD Volume 4. Every podcast, interview, episode, and article published on CorbettReport.com in 2011. All on two Data DVDs. For details or to buy other Corbett Report DVDs, please go to CorbettReport.com/shop.